Good morning and welcome to this session of oral arguments in the 11th Circuit. I know that you have been told about our traffic light system of timing, which is when the light turns yellow, you have 2 minutes remaining in your allotted time. And when the light turns red, you must stop. That may not be the case at traffic lights in Miami, but that is the rule here. So of course, if you're answering a question from one of us, then you may finish your answer. Oops, need my reading glasses. Our first case of the day is number 2213764, United States of America versus Jonathan Neroy Morris. Mr. Horwitz.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Phil Horwitz and I represent the appellant in this case, Jonathan Morris. The brief that was filed on behalf of Mr. Morris contains five issues, and I want to kind of start at the beginning and the middle, if I may. The beginning is the indictment in this case, where Mr. Morris is charged in count one with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. In count one, the grand jury further alleged two specific guns that were found in two different occasions within the vehicle, as well as two sets of ammunition that was contained in each weapon. The middle is the issue that I raised, which is number three in my brief. And the reason for that is that the court in this case did not give a specific verdict form as to each of the objects alleged in count one, which was each firearm, whether each firearm was knowingly possessed, and the ammunition as well. This is something that was not raised by the parties, but was raised by the court itself, which is at the third volume of the trial, and it's at page three, where the court, before closing arguments, raised the issue that it dawns on me, we talked about the conjunctivity issue. It may be that we should have a verdict form which makes reference to each firearm, because it seems that each firearm would have to have unanimity with respect to its possession by a convicted felon. In other words, six can't agree on one firearm and six can't agree to another. Based on that, and in preparing for oral argument, it reminded me of the phrase, six of one, half a dozen of the other. And that's not what we have here. The phrase six of one, half a dozen of the other means that there are two equivalent items that either one would have the same result. In this case, the options are far from equivalent because a lack of unanimity as to the firearms and the ammunition would cause the allegations to fail.
Suppose we agree with you, with your premise. Didn't the district court orally tell the jury you have to consider each count, and in each count there are separate allegations, the type of drug, the firearm or ammunition, even the particular firearm, so you have to unanimously agree as to all of those items? Doesn't that solve the problem you're complaining about, whether or not we agree with your premise that that was required?
Respectfully, I disagree, Your Honor. The case as to count two involved the possession of two types of substances, fentanyl and crack cocaine. Each one did not carry a minimum mandatory. They were basically zero to a 20-year maximum count. The effect of the jury's verdict that was given to them, the verdict form, even though it didn't affect the sentencing, there was one line for cocaine, for crack cocaine, and one line for fentanyl, and the jury had to make individual choices. The court even said that it's going to pass out copies of the instructions, and the jurors were to look at those written instructions. And it says on page 12, I believe, of the instructions, nothing about unanimity. It's there as far as the drugs are concerned, but it's not there as far as the weapon and the ammunition, because in this case, the defense made it a centerpiece of their argument, the lack of DNA, the fact that the second firearm was discovered had multiple contributors to the DNA, with the primary contributor being female.
So I understand that you, at least in response to my question, you seem to be suggesting, okay, the court may have orally said it, but there was nothing in writing given to the jury. But why are we not applying the well-recognized presumption that a jury follows its instructions?
The well-recognized presumption would be that, why do we split the drug counts? We split the drug counts for the same reason that we should split the gun counts in this case. By following the reasoning of, well, the jury's told to be unanimous, should that not take into account the drug counts where the penalties are identical? It doesn't affect the sentencing issue. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. Because in this case, Mr. Morris had the drugs in one spot, in his pocket. They were mixed together.
Well, to be fair, you keep talking about there were two guns found on two different occasions, but what you're putting last in that little fact pattern is they were found in his car.
Yes, Your Honor, but that goes to the essential element of the case of knowing possession. And the jury has to decide whether the possession of the firearm, aside from the other elements contained in that count, whether the possession of the firearm is knowing. You could have a 9-3 on one and a 7-5 on the other, either way. But by splitting up what the government has alleged, it's their allegations within the indictment. And if you look at the language in count one as well as count two, count two says it is further alleged that it's a detectable amount of crack, a detectable amount of fentanyl. In count one, it says it's further alleged, and there are four items. And the jury was not given the opportunity to decide as to each of the items, and the items had separate defenses.
The language of the statute asks whether he possessed, quote, any firearm or ammunition. Why doesn't the language of the statute mean that any firearm is any firearm and the jury does not have to be unanimous?
Thank you for that question, Your Honor. It does mean that the jury has to be unanimous. I think that is something that we all agree. But the jury has to be unanimous at a minimum as to one. If 7 out of 12 find for one firearm, 8 out of 12 find for another firearm, we don't have a unanimous verdict. And obviously the ammunition is contained therein. The key concept that we have to look at here is the unanimity of the jury.
Well, isn't the question, though, whether the particular firearm is an element of the crime or a means of committing the crime?
Judge, I've seen that those phrases used as to the, but I think the firearm is an element. And the reason why I believe it's an element is that it goes to the knowing possession. And you have to look at whether that firearm was knowingly possessed, because that's what the statute requires. And the government has alleged that four items were knowingly possessed. And they should have to prove them, because aside from an impact that it may have on sentencing, on cases involving three or more firearms and the guidelines, which I know is not controlling as far as a jury verdict is concerned, knowing possession is what's concerning here. And to use Judge Graham's words, we don't want to have a verdict with 6 of one and half a dozen of the other, where 6 jurors say, well, it's as to one firearm, but not as to the other, and the reverse for the second.
But isn't the scenario you're talking about where 6 think that he possesses one gun and the other 6 think he possessed the other gun, that at the end of the day, all of the jurors think he possessed any firearm, to go to Judge Pryor's question?
Judge, it doesn't go to the unanimity. which is the cornerstone of our system of justice.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, is that they all agree he had a firearm.
And that's a 6-6 scenario. It could be a 5-7, 4-8.
Why isn't it a unanimous verdict?
Judge, it's a unanimous. It's not a unanimous verdict because there is no finding by the jury as to each individual item that's alleged by the government. It's the government that makes the indictment in this case. And they further alleged that Mr. Morris, as a convicted felon, possessed not one but four different items within count one. And it's impossible without a simple interrogatory verdict, which we've all agreed is welcome in drug cases, should be the same in firearm cases.
Why wouldn't this be harmless error anyway? What's your best argument that there's a really big difference in his knowing possession of one versus the other?
The reason why it's not harmless error, and I'm over time, if I may complete my answer, is that jury instructions will not be reversed. It's a plain error standard here. I'm sorry, it's not a plain error standard, which I apologize for. It's an abuse of discretion standard. And in this case, it's the error was not harmless because we can't get behind that jury's verdict. Jury deliberations are secret. We never know why juries do what they do. Sometimes they do the right thing for the right reason. Sometimes the right thing for the wrong reason.
What if you were wearing two different holsters, both of which had a firearm in them when he was arrested and patted down? Would you still make the same argument?
Absolutely, Judge, because I know Mr. Morris was wearing a holster at the time.
No,
and
two.
I know the testimony was that one of the weapons fit the holster. But that doesn't mean a juror may not believe that testimony.
No, but in my hypothetical, maybe there's even a video of him getting out of the car wearing two holsters, each of which has a gun inside. Would you still be making the same argument?
I think this was a one holster case, but I don't
know. Sure, but I'm asking about a different case.
Sure. And obviously we have the testimony that the if the weapons fit the holster, but we don't decide the facts and what to believe and what not to believe. With our education and experience, we kind of have a better idea than the man off the street that's sitting as a juror. And we don't want to go behind the jury.
So are you saying you would be making the same argument or you wouldn't?
I would.
Okay.
I would be making the same argument as to unanimity, because that's the cornerstone and touchstone of what this case is about. I see that my time is up. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. Again, may it please the court, Amanda Perwin on behalf of the United States. As Judge Branch pointed out, it's true this court does not need to reach the merits of the unanimity question, because in addition to this court's pattern unanimity instruction in its duty to deliberate instruction, Judge Graham also went above and beyond. And before he excused the jury, he told them specifically that it had to be unanimous as to the firearm, the ammunition, and, quote, even the particular firearm. So this court can and should apply its well-recognized presumption that jurors, of course, follow their instructions, and that they did so in this case. That said, should this court reach the issue of unanimity, it should hold consistent with Richardson and the First Circuit's decision in the Verrecchia case, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, that which firearm or which ammunition is not an element of 922G. It is rather a means or a brute fact that makes up the offense. And there are a couple of reasons for that. The first is, of course, as Judge Pryor pointed out, the plain language of 922G penalizes the possession of any firearm by certain categories of persons. And in the Verrecchia case, the court reviewed the legislative history of 922G and concluded that the focus was on the person. It was not on the particular firearm. The court went so far as to examine the enhanced penalty provision of 922G, which is in 924E, which provides a 15-year mandatory minimum based on the person's criminal history. But again, the court noted nothing to do with which firearm, nothing to do with the type of ammunition. Again, the focus was on the person and the criminal history. The second consideration that the Verrecchia court considered, which I think is consistent with the Supreme Court's reasoning in Richardson, was the risk of unfairness. In Richardson, the court was looking at the continuing criminal enterprise statute, whether or not the jury had to be unanimous as to which series of violations made up that statutory violation. And the court looked at the breadth of the possible violations and said, look, we're running a risk that the jury's going to be in widespread disagreement, for example, over which violation undergirds this statute. Or we risk the jury finds no violations and just convicts based on the idea that, well, where there's smoke, you know, there must be fire. Here we're talking about a much narrower issue, whether or not a person possessed a firearm, any firearm. And it's a much narrower factual question, and it raises no real risk of unfairness akin to Richardson.
Let me ask you another question about the jury instruction. Mr. Horowitz brought up the fact that the admonition to the jury that it had to be unanimous on the particular firearm was not part of the formal jury instructions. It was simply something the district court said before the jury went to deliberate. Does that make any difference?
I don't believe there's a difference between a written instruction and an oral instruction, Your Honor. I think the presumption applies either way. It's true that the verdict form was not a special verdict form as to which firearm and which ammunition. But again, we presume either way that the jury follows its instructions.
Do you think, I want to make sure I understand, do you think that instruction was necessary, or do you think it was a gloss on what the court needed to tell the jury?
I don't think the instruction was necessary, Your Honor. I don't think unanimity is required as to particular firearm or ammunition under the plain language of the statute and the cases, you know, deciding this question in other circuits. But given that the court gave it, this court does not need to reach the question in this case.
But we certainly could, right?
You could.
Because if we, let's say that we agreed with you, but we didn't reach it, then you would probably, how often does this happen, right? Is this a question that gets brought up frequently?
I don't know how often defendants request this instruction, but yes, 922G cases are very common in this district. We try them all the time. I would imagine there are prosecutors who sometimes do agree to have a special verdict form, but of course, going above and beyond what the law requires doesn't necessarily create the obligation to do so.
Thank you.
If the court has no further questions, we would rest on our briefs and ask that you affirm.
Your friend on the other side mentioned Richardson. So before your time starts, since I know this is your time, I'll ask you specifically to respond to that case, which said a federal jury need not always decide unanimously which of several possible sets of underlying brute facts make up a particular element. Why, in your view, isn't the firearm here one of those brute facts?
Because the firearm in these cases, the defenses were different. And it goes to the knowledge element as opposed to a brute fact. Because if you read Richardson, it would say, hey, you know what? You have two sets of drugs with identical penalties that don't affect a sentence, but you're splitting up and giving separate jury verdict forms as to each substance. In this case, it didn't affect whether the defendant was guilty or not guilty. Let's just say narcotics. He possessed drugs, whatever you want to call it. But in this case, the indictment further alleged four separate items or four separate violations where the defenses were different. And it should not be a brute fact. It should be an essential element to knowledge. And the government cited, and I know I'm going to brutalize the name as well, Verrecchia. It's a plain error case. They cited United States versus Pollock in their brief. It's a plain error case. United States versus Dijon, a plain error case. This is a case of first impression. This is where the error has been preserved. Now, though the other three cases were plain error cases, the court went on, and Davis, of course, from this circuit, is also a plain error case where this issue was raised for the first time on appeal. This is the first time that this issue has been raised where the issue has been preserved. So the standard that this court should employ is much different. Now, turning to Judge Graham's statement, prior to reading the jury instructions to the jury, he gave each one of the 12 jurors a copy of the instructions with the explanation saying that jurors tend to listen better and follow along better if they have a copy of the instructions in front of them when he reads them. And the jury did just that. The jury instructions contain absolutely no mention of the court's statement at the conclusion of the instructions. And
you have a case that supports what you seem to be suggesting here is that the presumption that the jury follows the instructions only applies to the written instructions?
No, I do not, Your Honor. We hopefully presume that juries follow instructions. The question is whether Judge Graham's statement was an instruction, because you have the jury sitting there following along, literally reading verse by verse, sentence by sentence, and then the judge says something that's totally not in the instructions. Courts take great pains in crafting jury instructions between the court and the parties. And in this case, this is something that is, it's more of a gratuitous statement as opposed to a jury instruction. So it's impossible to know whether the jury took it as an instruction. I read it as a statement as opposed to an instruction. Because if you're sitting in the jury box as a juror, the judge has concluded reading the instructions. You're at the last sentence on the last page, and you're turning it over. And the judge says something else, and you don't know whether it's an instruction or not. So I look at what Judge Graham said as more of a statement as opposed to an instruction. It was nowhere else contained within the jury instructions. And as such, it should be reversible error for not having a verdict form.
I've got a question in a different area.
Sure.
Do you think that this case is